Welcome back to New Game Plus. You are about to listen to a very special episode. We've never done anything like this before.
Very, very special.
That's a great interjection, Penny.
I don't think we can overstate how much we haven't ever done something like this and how special it is.
Right. NGP is a community-oriented podcast.
No, it's a retro gaming podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry. It is a retro gaming podcast that is built around community. We chat daily in Discord. We host game nights. We've sent each other pizza. Like, we've done...
Oh, yeah.
We've done extreme community sports.
You're welcome.
On top of that, many of our listeners are content creators themselves.
Yes.
Well, for the very first time, we have decided to have members from the New Game Plus community host this very retro recap.
I'm worried. Listen, I'm worried because I think that people will like them more than us.
Right.
And we're screwed.
This is an evolution of the content to the next version of ourselves.
Yeah.
But real leadership is working yourself out of a job, right? So
Hey,
maybe we can sit back on the fat NGP cash while all of the community members then rake it in for us over the next few years.
Yeah, because this has been such a racket.
Podcast.
It's in retro gaming.
Retro recap.
Hey, are we on time, by the way? We do it every 20-ish, 25-ish episodes. Are we good?
We're a couple over, completely intentional.
We failed.
What? No, completely intentional.
That's also very normal. We never actually hit 20.
The thing is, Kenny is going to the lake, and so we strategically placed it on the lake house.
Wait, that's not a joke. I think that's really
why.
It's summertime, so Kenny's going to be at the lake. All right, so the three community people that you're about to hear an entire retro recap from are the following. Garlyle.
Woo!
He's been with us for...
ever.
A couple of years now, and he has played along and written commentary in on each and every episode.
I really want a soundboard. Right
one
now.
Of our directors, super invested in everything that we do, and we're just so glad to have him be part of this episode.
Nolan, would you just be doing the air horn?
Or I would be doing the air horn after every name. Yeah. I've never wanted one on podcast.
Right. Until now.
Yeah.
Shauna, who is a wonderful content creator, has her own YouTube channel that is doing my favorite series on the interwebs right now. That really is Rags to Riches.
Really good taste.
I almost said Rags to Riches. Rags to Wizard? Is that what it is?
Rags to Wizard.
Where Kenny started with nothing and now he's got everything.
In the Sims,
as a Sims character. A Sims character based on me.
Shauna follows you around and films your life as you improve.
That's creepy and boring. I don't
want to skip over. Garlyle has a Mega Man podcast where he's going through pretty much chronologically all the way through the Mega Man series. And then Antonin, who's one of our very few remaining day ones who's been with us from the very beginning. And he's got a Final Fantasy podcast.
Yeah.
So, hey, I love Final Fantasy and I've listened to every single one of his episodes so far.
Another one?
Are you DJ Khaled?
No, it's a reference to the name
of his podcast. I was just subtle shout outs.
The three of them are going to host this retro recap and they're going to do a phenomenal job. It's going to be different because they didn't necessarily play every single game. Garlyle did. But it's going to be more of a reflection of not just the games, but of the episodes that we recorded.
Yes.
Which is going to be especially fun in this set because there were a couple of very controversial episodes in the community and among different people. And so... we got to say to the three of you, thank you so much for taking some time, for risking, for doing something new, for trying this with us, for being part of our community, for giving us a single week off, sort of, in the last 5.5 years. Like, for all of the things. And
well, y'all have had weeks off. I've never have.
We're excited for this experiment.
No, I haven't.
Hey, enjoy Retro Recap 11.
Thank you. Hello, and welcome to New Game Plus, a retro gaming podcast where three fans spend 21 weeks listening to one podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then they talk about it, and then we talk about it. I'm not Dustin, I'm Garlisle.
And I'm not Kenny, I'm Shauna.
I'm not Nolan, I'm Antonin.
And this is Retro Recap 11. If you haven't turned off the show yet, when you found out our usual hosts wouldn't be hosting it, this is a special episode where every 20 games or so, we recap the previous episodes of New Game Plus. It's a good opportunity for those who are new to the series to find out about episodes they may have missed, and for the rest of us to take a trip down memory lane. But while the guys did a great job introducing us, let's take a moment and go around and say hi to everybody so they can get used to who we are.
Okay. All right. I'm Antonin, and I've been listening to New Game Plus since episode 2. So I've been here for a while. And yeah, I'm excited to help recap these episodes and these games that I definitely played all of them, you know.
Hello, I'm Shauna, and I've been listening to New Game Plus probably 2 years now, and I'm here because of Antonin. I was a part of the Bring a Friend to the Podcast campaign that happened, and you can't get rid of me. And, you know, now I make a YouTube series about Kenny being a wizard, and here we are.
I'm so glad that worked out.
This was not the plan, but here we are.
And I'm Garlisle. You probably heard me before way back when on the Live Alive episode, if you were there. If not, you've been hearing from me nonetheless in commentary for the past couple of years. So, Antonin, did you compile any stats about the recent games? Just to give us a general overview of what we'll be facing today?
Yeah. So I first wanted to look at which episode was the shortest and which one was the longest. So the shortest one was Rampage, which is, I guess, the most recent episode. And it was 50 minutes. And the longest one was with me, and it was 69 minutes. So that's quite a difference there. And most of the episodes were actually around an hour, which is surprising because I think the episodes used to be a lot shorter, like just mm-hmm. a year or two back. Those are my main stats. And we had, let's see, 3-4 director episodes in this recap, which is, wow, just incredible.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say that this last... I've been calling it a season of games. These last 20 episodes have been really director focused. And I think that that's really cool because it gives you, you know, more voices to hear and more people in the community to talk. And so, like, I've really enjoyed this last like chunk of games just because we've been able to meet so many people of the community.
Plus, we get better episodes as a result and better games to play. Should we get started with the first game in the list?
Yeah. I was thinking about how we might transition to it. And then my final conclusion was that living up to Dustin Segways was kind of just a fantasy. He's just too good for me to match. He's too advanced.
Like in our retro game of the week. Seeing as though the first game that kicked off this season was with you, Antonin, why don't you tell us a little bit about the game?
Sure, yeah. So the game is Final Fantasy IV Advance, and that was one of the director episodes in this batch of episodes. It's a Game Boy Advance game. And we spent like a little bit over an hour talking during that episode about, you know, how this is like one of the fundamental JRPGs, and you know, it's one of the most popular JRPGs as well, and one of the recommended like entryways into the Final Fantasy series. So I think that's like it's a very important aspect of that game. And because it's a director episode, we actually don't have an NGP status for this one. So kind of an interesting thing about director episodes.
So are we going to give it NGP status now?
I mean,
are we going to override the guys?
It's our show now.
That's a good point. I'm on the fence. I don't know. If I would be like the last one to decide about it, I would take the Kenny way and kind of walk around it for about 10 minutes before giving you a response.
Awesome. So I have a question, Antonin, about this episode. So I know that, you know, you do your podcast, which is all Final Fantasy focused. How did that feel to have your director episode and your podcast like a line where it was almost like a crossover episode because I listened to both, and it was kind of, it was very cool to hear, you know, you playing the game and you offering commentary on it, and then coming on to NGP and then being able to speak on it.
Yeah, it was definitely very exciting because I started my series, my podcast series, the Yet Another Final Fantasy Podcast, as a result of NGP, as a result of New Game Plus podcast, because I, you know, they played so many Final Fantasy games and everybody talks about Final Fantasy in Lounge and on Discord, you know, and I didn't really play any of them. And so now I got to sit down and like talk about it as almost like a quasi expert. So it was definitely great to be able to discuss it with the guys. But while we're talking about role-playing games, I want to take us on a different quest, and that's with Chex.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So Chex Quest was a 1996 PC shooter that was essentially a Doom mod, which is really unusual for something to actually be played on this podcast, because usually they're playing the base games and mods. Mods might be like part of the conversation and stuff, but they're not the main focus. And then this time it was like, no, just the game itself is a mod.
Well, I guess what was fascinating is that this game was distributed through like Serial or something, right? So, I mean, even if it's a mod, it was distributed as a standalone game. Did you all get a chance to play it?
I dabbled.
I was playing the remake of it for a while, and then I actually tracked down like the original DOS version and got that running, and that was, I mean, the thing is Doom is like a good game on a fundamental level. It's a fun game and it still holds up. It's just kind of like how much of that quality was actually Chex Quest then, and how much of that was, you know, how much of that was actually just Doom's quality. It's an interesting discussion.
But Serial.
It was a fun game. So I played a little bit of it, the remaster. And so there is a remaster out, and it's very playable and very doable. And I think one interesting thing about this game, and I remember that was brought up in the episode, was that this is a non-violent game, right? Because you shoot some kind of thing that teleports the monsters away, I think, instead of actually killing them. I thought that was a kind of an interesting twist on Doom, which is such a rated M game.
Right? It's such an opposite. I think I forget what the enemies are called, but you're sending them home, which, you know, you're helping them.
Yeah.
I don't remember what they were called. I just remember they were shaped like boogers.
Yeah, I think they were snot-based. There's a snot-based
definitely game. A kid's game.
Yeah. Snot and cereal. Delicious.
I think what we can do is slip and slide into the madness of this next game.
Antonin! Don't!
So the game he's referring to is, well, let's see here. It was Ike Ike Neketsu Hokibu Subete Korondo Dairanto, or Go Go Neketsu Hockey Club Slip and Slide Madness, or Almost Crash in the Boys Ice Challenge. Pick your favorite. They're all good. They're all there. It was a 1992 NES ice hockey game based in the same world as River City Ransom. Where does one even start with this one?
So I didn't even attempt to play this game because I'm just bad at sports and I'm bad at sports related anything. But I feel like if I was a kid in, when did this come out? 1992?
Yeah.
I feel like this would be one of those games based on like the cover art that I would be wanting to play and think that I could play sports. But then once it gets into how long the periods are where they're like actually like, I think they're like game long periods of hockey, and just how long the game seems to take, I probably would have been,
oh God, the memories,
not wanting to play this game as a child.
Yeah, it was such a shame because like it had such a cool idea of like implementing, like it's hockey. Everybody watches hockey matches for the fights, right? And that's what they emphasized with it was, hey, let's have you beat up the other teams. And then it just, the matches go on too long and all the excitement fades and it just falls apart, and it's so unfortunate.
Yeah, so this game did not get a New Game Plus, with Nolan being the descender who wanted to give it a New Game Plus. And it sounds like there are quite a few things that could be tightened up. Didn't this have a remake or re-release afterward?
Sadly, no, but I think all of us were like, hey, if they'd done more with it, we would have absolutely gone for it. Like, it is an idea that could still work really well if done well.
Okay, so for the next game, the hosts and some of us have played Jackal, which is a NES title, and it came out in 1988, so it's like it's a fairly old game at this point, and it is a gun-style shoot-em-up, and it was made by Konami, so it's got like a heavyweight, you know, developer that made the game.
Okay, so I have a couple things on this game. This little baby Shauna would have loved playing this game as a kid. Like, these are the types of games that I got really excited about for some reason when I was little. And so just watching the first play on it made me want to go out and play it. I didn't get to play this particular title, but this one is definitely on my list to go back and play, because it definitely was something that like spoke to me. Also, about this episode, if you want to go back and like listen to a few episodes, I kind of highlight some of, you know, just some of those poignant moments of some of our New Game Plus episodes. I started noticing that there is definitely a Dustin and Nolan level of frustration with Kenny on this episode. And I pulled a quote from the episode, which was, let our community destroy Kenny. So
Dustin and Nolan were really, really into this one. Mm-hmm. Like, and I kind of get it, like, especially for 1998 or 1988, this game was actually like surprisingly like fully fleshed out levels and stuff. And I imagine the arcade game probably looked even better. Mm-hmm. I do think they went a little bit overboard, and I don't think it was quite all that hot from a modern standpoint, but I kind of get it too.
We can talk about Nancy Drew's Last Train to Blue Moon Canyon.
So I've seen these games, I think, at like Walmart, like every single time I've gone there. It's like it's always stocked and on the shelf. And I never played it until that week. And it's kind of exciting. There's so many of these games. So this next game, Nancy Drew, Last Train to the Blue Moon Canyon, it's a PC-only title. It's a point-and-click adventure, and it came in 2005. That feels like the wrong genre for the year. And I think they're still coming out, or at least there was one a few years back that came out recently, which is just kind of mind-blowing. I think the development studio even has a podcast where they discuss the games, which is just amazing.
That's really cool. So I do have some memories of these titles, not from playing them, but in my early 20s, I worked at an electronics store where we sold video games. And these, like at Walmart, you were saying that they're just like on shelves. We had, you know, a whole 4-foot section dedicated to Nancy Drew games. And I kind of remember these as like a Sunday afternoon game. So what that meant was like, there would be parents that would always come in and they would want to buy a game for their kid. And when you were selling games to parents, there's always like this laundry list of things it has to have. It can't be violent. It has to be educational. It has to be like something else. You know, parents want to get something good for their kids. So they were always very attracted to the Nancy Drew games because they're derived from books and stories and things like that. And I really appreciate this game or these types of games because point and click mystery games definitely were like a favorite of mine growing up. So like I grew up playing Myst and like, you know, all of the games that came from Myst. So this is definitely one of those. But also I appreciate games like this because I looked at it as a way to bring new gamers into computer gaming. So if you know, your parents come home with a Nancy Drew game for you to play, and maybe that's when you start getting really interested in games and stuff like that. So I definitely have fond memories of this kind of game, or this game in particular, from working at the store and selling them to parents to take home to their children.
Well, I mean, there must be something about it that they have so many installments. This is the 13th installment in the series, in the game series. And it's just, it's kind of fascinating that you have this like high, it must be high enough quality game, right? For people to be keep playing it for like 30 years or 20 plus years. Right. And it did get the Super New Game Plus, which is like all three of the hosts.
It was kind of a surprise, but it's the guys actually finally found a game that they enjoy in the genre. Like, usually they're extremely picky about this sort of thing, and like one of them at most will actually enjoy it. But like, it's generally like puzzle oriented enough and using sensible enough logic and stuff that like it's actually not that bad. It's not a shining star in the genre, but I was genuinely impressed because I wasn't expecting much. So, quick question about the next game. Do you guys call it Z or Z?
I call it Z.
Yeah. But then, like, I was just listening to this episode and they were calling it Z because it came out like a week earlier in the UK. So they were calling it Z. I don't know.
Well, regardless of what country you're from, ZZ, literally the name is just that one letter, was a 1996 PC strategy game, which kind of was it was kind of real-time strategy, but with a lot of the unit production and stuff automated, so you could just focus on moving and commanding units, taking over bases. A very different kind of real-time strategy experience, for sure. And it was a special episode because we did have the wonderful Unbedavable on the episode, who is one of our fellow directors and currently producers.
Yeah, again, I love hearing from the directors and having Unbedavable on and just like hearing his stories. I think that, you know, just hearing people's stories on how they get into gaming and all that kind of stuff is like super interesting. I didn't play this one. I missed this game, but it definitely was, if I remember correctly, it was like pure like 90s nostalgia as far as like the characters and how the game was laid out.
Yeah. If you are into the 90s sort of like, just like, what's the, like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure type, just all that sort of thing, you probably would have loved this game. No, thanks. It's a little much for me. I think I've grown out of that.
I did have, actually, I had another note on this episode. So on this episode, Dustin has a problem with three-syllable letters. So W was a big issue for Dustin. So there was like definitely some top-tier banter on this episode as well. So I definitely recommend going back and listening to this one. Just to hear Kenny and Dustin go back and forth about three syllable letters.
I mean, that's fair. Double W. It's a double V. Grow up. Why have we not changed that?
I think it's hard to cover all these episodes and have like a very crystal clear view of all the different games. Which brings me, you know, to the next game, Kirby 64, the Crystal Shards.
Oh no.
I was gonna go with speaking of episodes brought to you by things, an episode brought to you by our Patreon pool that was brought in by another viewer, and if you've never played a Kirby game before, they're the most adorable things. This was an N64 platformer that just honestly is just as cute today as the day it came out.
Okay, so I never ever have been attracted to a Kirby game, but every single time I play one, I'm like, why don't I play Kirby games? They are so cute and so fun. And the music, especially on this title, the music was just amazing. So, and I think that that's in one of our music. Which one is it? The N64?
Yeah, there's almost bound to be something from it in the relaxing N64 playlist the guys have on YouTube.
Yeah. but yeah, like this game is awesome. And I think for an N64 title, you get very used to like the polygons. And I was so surprised that this one didn't look like an N64 title. So like this game, you know, 10 out of 10 for sure.
Yeah, there's something that happened a lot with N64 games and PS1 games was they were trying to do like, oh, it's 3D, we can go realistic and stuff. And the thing was, is Kirby's design has always been so simple, so cute, so bubbly, and like the world, the characters, that it actually works really well in that early 3D, like polygonal style.
And what about also just the mechanics of when Kirby would take an enemy and like he would get different abilities based off which enemy that he had, but it was like crazy. It just seemed like beyond what normally, you know,
yeah,
we've been used to.
Yeah, you get the power combos and you get to mix the abilities that you copy, which is kind of, it's, that's a really interesting idea. And I love the idea of like having different playthroughs based off of how you combine different powers. And it looks like there are 28 possible combinations, which is quite a bit, you know, adds to the replayability of the game.
And then also another great episode to go back and listen to or watch on YouTube, because in this episode, we get Dustin singing One Direction songs.
Oh, God, I just remembered that.
And also Kenny blesses us with his horse or two-year-old's quip, because at this point we had so many directors and producers that Kenny blessed us with yet another beautiful turn of phrase about horses and two-year-olds.
Yeah, so this game did get the New Game Plus status, and it was all three of the guys that voted on it this way. So it was definitely a very liked game.
We got probably one of our most amazing segues ever for SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom, the 2003 GameCube, PlayStation 2, Xbox, and now PC title as well, that has since been remastered and stuff, in which you get to listen to Dustin just absolutely belting out a censored rendition of the SpongeBob SquarePants theme, which I'm not going to spoil for you here. You need to go listen to it yourself.
That was incredible. Just listen to it. Like, we should have MP3s of it.
Somebody needs to put like a mix together of all these really funny things that happen.
One of the things that, I mean, starting off before we even get into the episode and the gameplay, well, the gameplay, but the first play of this is memorable because it's a completely, I mean, it's SpongeBob. And I think that everyone has at least seen a SpongeBob episode. You don't have to love SpongeBob. I kind of relate a lot to Nolan here, where I watched SpongeBob way longer than I probably should have, like well into my 20s, just because it was just fun. But Kenny goes into this first play with like no emotional investment at all in this game. It's totally like deadpan the whole time. So you have this contrast of this really bright, fun, you know, Bikini Bottom, and then you have Kenny that seems to, who just can't be bothered to be here right now. So it's like the first play is so fun to watch. But then as you get into the episode and the gameplay, I mean, we got some, you know, again, top tier quotes from this episode, specifically from Nolan saying that he will choke slam Kenny. So
when did things get so violent?
I don't know. So that was kind of, I started tracking just like frustration levels in the episodes as I've been going back and listening. But yeah, it something took a turn at Bikini Bottom, and you know, violence is becoming a part of the podcast.
Sounds like it. So this was a 3D platformer, right? And it was out for PS2, GameCube, Xbox, GBA, and PC. And like Garlisle said, there is a remaster that I think it came out last year called, well, it has the same title, and it's affixed by Rehydrated to show that it's a remaster. And yeah, it's a super fun game, like just to jump around and to see all the locations. And, you know, I think this is one of the better TV show to video game transitions that I've seen. I was going to say something about being a Pokemon fan. I've been ripping open Japanese packs of Pokemon TCG cards recently, but that's not the game we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about a monster in the pocket, not a pocket monster.
Yeah, which is kind of unfortunate because I don't know about you guys, but Pokemon was a way more interesting game. I've just got to put that out there. I know Konami's kind of like a big name company and they do some good games. And it wasn't like this was like actively bad. It was just kind of one of the most there platformers we've had on the show.
Yeah, it definitely was there. And when this game got pulled, I thought it was going to be like a Pokemon title. I got really excited. And then I was very like disappointed that this was what we got instead. And I mean, I like monsters and I like horror films and things like that. But that just wasn't the game that I was hoping it would be. Although I probably would have really liked the toys as a kid, but the platformer just wasn't doing it for me.
Yeah, so this was a whole media franchise. I'm not familiar with it at all, but I remember that a lot of people in Discord were talking about like growing up with this and being familiar with the monsters in your pocket. And I guess it sounds like they just decided to create a game on top of it.
I don't even remember seeing the toys either. Like, I don't have any recollection or memory of this game or franchise either.
Yeah, much like the episode itself, there just really wasn't that much to talk about Monster in My Pocket. Next up, though, I guess we can rise above Monster in My Pocket with an ascending adventure in the 1987 Kid Icarus for the NES, which was a Nintendo first-person published title that was a little bit adventure, a little bit RPG, mostly platformer, and really creative, but also really difficult.
Difficult is an understatement for this game.
This one always kind of confused me because it feels like its difficulty curve is backwards. Like, you start out in like a vertically scrolling stage with like tough platforming, and if you fall back down, it's not like, oh, the stage will scroll back down with you. No, you just fall in a pit and die because everything below you is gone now. And that's the kind of game it starts out as. Mm-hmm. And then later on, you start getting more health and you get better like damage on enemies and stuff, and it becomes more fun. It's just like, it's such a weird little game.
Yeah, that's brutal. I didn't make it past the infinite death. So, no.
It did have this interesting mechanic of like when you walk to the right, like you appear on the left side of the screen. I know that confused me so much the first time I played this game. And it is a game that I see listed on so many like top NES games and like games that you need to play if you're a gamer or a retro gamer. So it was fun to like pick it up, and especially since it's on the Switch NES thing on the subscription or whatever. So it's like super accessible right now. And it did get the NGP status. So it was definitely a light game.
Yeah, I was actually really curious to see where they ended up on it, specifically because like it is such a hard sell and something so hard to get into. But to see the guys actually work through a game that's difficult and then be like, hey, yeah, no, this actually has something to it. Like, it's a very interesting episode. According to some people, i.e. Dustin, there was the 1994 shoot 'em up Rayforce from the arcades, and I guess technically the consoles too. There was a release there, but that was a divisive episode. That was a very, very interesting episode to listen to. I don't think I've seen Dustin get quite that mad in a while.
No, I would go so far to say that this is the most controversial episode that New Game Plus has ever had.
Oh, that's a big claim there.
Look, I pulled some quotes. Okay. So just to start off, the sass level that Dustin started off this episode with was at an 11. It was just already like to the roof sass level. And my quote that I pulled was Dustin speaking to Kenny and saying, too hard for your teeny baby hands and brain to process.
What a burn. Oh my God.
And it just continues.
So this saga, this whole arc for this season of New Game Plus is getting to a high point here. I see. Started with Bikini Bottom and now we're here.
I mean, do we really know if Kenny's at the lake? Like, where is Kenny?
maybe he's there, but permanently.
I mean, I'm at the lake right now.
Yeah, do you see him, Garlel?
No, I don't see him. I don't know if you guys can, but I don't see him.
But just to say, like, the teeny baby hands quote is pulled, I think, within, like, the first 12 minutes of the episode. So it only escalates from there. And the final thoughts portion of the show is equally as epic. So I agree. I've never seen Dustin so commit up. Up to this point, I hadn't seen Dustin so committed to a game besides Final Fantasy. But, you know, there's more to come on that later, I'm sure.
So the next game we're going to discuss is F-Zero. It's a 1990 title that came out on the SNES, and this was a director episode with Wardanus. This was an interesting game because it started a whole franchise, which is the F-Zero franchise. And it's a racing game, and I think it's one of the few, maybe the only one, that the hosts actually enjoyed playing on this podcast. Because if I remember correctly, Dustin, Kenny, and Nolan hate racing games, and this one was one that I think everybody enjoyed. I very much enjoyed it. It's out on like the SNES Virtual Console or whatever for the Switch, and so it's easily accessible, and it's a very beautiful and fun game. Have you all played it?
I did not play this one.
Yeah, I spent a fair amount of time playing it, actually, thanks to the fact that it was just easily available like that. The guys seemed to only really like Mario Kart up to this point, mostly because most of the other games they were playing were like lesser Mario Kart for the most part. Yes, I'm including you, Pod Racer. Y'all can come at me if you disagree with me. But that's beside the point. F-Zero was a like futuristic style, very much not Mario Kart racer. But because there's a focus in the game on technical like mastery and stuff, and like Wardanus was really an expert on that. He gives a good explanation of a lot of the depth and stuff. But because there was that, and because it shines through, I think the guys ended up actually like really enjoying it because of that.
Yeah, and I think it was one of the early, if not the release title for the SNES, right? And it uses like that special mode where you have, you know, you can see far in on the track, like really far on the track, and right, you have like really smooth gameplay for racing around.
Yeah, it's mode seven to like kind of rotate the field underneath you so that it looks like you're like, it's a pseudo 3D effect, where it's like stretching the image and stuff to make it appear that you're driving across it as opposed to just like flat on the screen. Very primitive, but honestly, like it still gets the point across. It still creates a fairly clear image. And I don't think the guys have done a whole lot of Mode 7 like featuring games on the podcast prior to this point.
No, but they do point it out anytime it happens, and I think they can really spot it now. Like they know what can be done with Mode 7, which is interesting. I really enjoyed this game. I played like a bunch of games in the franchise, and this was fun, especially since like yeah, it's so easily accessible, and it's like it's free if you have the NES console, so it's you know easy to pick up and start playing right away.
Next up was the 1998 PS1 title Jade Cocoon, Story of the Tamamayu, which if you're not familiar with Tamamayu, Dustin asked in the episode, hey, what does that translate to? It translates to Jade Cocoon. The game's name is Jade Cocoon, Story of the Jade Cocoon, and I just found that fascinating. But it was an RPG, kind of a monster catcher fusion-y, sort of Pokemon-esque, but done in collaboration with animators from Studio Ghibli. And I don't know about you guys, but we got a lot of Studio Ghibli fans in the community. Don't know if you've noticed, but shout out to y'all.
This game was beautiful to look at, and the voice acting was a lot.
Yeah, it is like surprisingly heavily voice acted, especially for being a one disc game. Mm-hmm. It's using the pre-rendered background style to do some like actually really nice looking like different types of forest and jungle visuals for the dungeons and stuff. On a presentation front, it was great. It was just like when you realize that the monster catching animation takes like 20 seconds, it's kind of like there's always an interesting conversation when we're discussing like PlayStation 1 RPGs about like Well, that was the era when they were like, hey, we can do all this fancy, crazy stuff, and we haven't got, like, speed up and stuff. So long animations, they're like, oh, hey, it's a tech demo. Mm. And these days it's like, yeah, can I just play the game? Can I do that, please?
That's true. That's true. I'm glad you bring that up because, you know, going back in time, that's what it was. It was the long cutscenes. It was the cinematography of the game and showing what the console can do as well as the game. So I'm glad you bring that point up because that definitely was a big part of early like PlayStation 1 gaming back in the day.
Yeah. I do want to special shout out to Glenn Austin, who he actually went through and finished the game. Now, admittedly, he finished the game by using speed up on an emulator, and I can't blame him for that. But he seemed to come out with a pretty positive response to it. So maybe really the only thing holding the game back actually is its speed. I'm not entirely sold yet, though.
There's just so many games that need to be remastered and just made faster, right? Like, that's all we need sometimes. But
where's my Final Fantasy X with a cutscene skip, please?
I'm so looking forward to watching every single cutscene in its entirety when I get to that game. But so interestingly, so JRPGs, that's like Dustin's bread and butter, like favorite genre of all time. He voted no on this game. Like it was a NGP loss on all fronts. Nobody liked it.
Yeah, that was surprising to me. I always wonder, especially when we have JRPGs where Dustin specifically is going to land because that's, you know, typically always been his bread and butter and that, you know, what he seems to get the most excited about. So I was very surprised to see that he landed on a no here.
Yeah, I remember thinking to myself, there's an episode we'll get to soon where I remember thinking to myself, Dustin will probably give NGP status to any RPG as long as it isn't completely trash. And now you're reminding me, yeah, no, this didn't get it from him. And that's kind of a surprise.
But I guess we can't always live in our host's shadow, like in Shadow of the Colossus.
Shadow of the Colossus was a producer pool pick. It is a 2005 PlayStation 2 game. I think it's the newest game the guys have ever done on the podcast. And like, this is one of those games that would not have been valid for selection when they started the podcast, because hey, 15 years old or older. Shadow of the Colossus was kind of a landmark title in terms of like a lot of people consider it one of the best demonstrations of like games as art and stuff. It's a very like story light but emotionally focused adventure, boss fight, gauntlet, puzzle, something. It's kind of hard to describe it as a game, to be honest, because it's a lot of things. Supposedly most of those are good. I have opinions.
it is a game with like a huge focus on just like boss battles, and I personally haven't played it. It's been on my list to play for a long time, but I haven't played it. What I found interesting was Dustin, we're talking about Dustin a lot, but Dustin's response to this game, where I think he put it in his like top five games of all time that he loves, and he played through the original as well as the remake, or maybe
he did both.
At that time, at the time, he hasn't finished the remake, if I remember correctly. So,
but yeah, he did go out and buy the PS4 remake right after finishing it on PS2 and stuff. And the guys really loved it, and most of our community really loved it. And
Garlisle, where did you land? I forget what you said.
But enough about this tale. Let's talk about Moomin's Tale. Moomin's Tale is a 2D platformer that came out in 1999 for the Game Boy Color, and it was based off of the Moomin Troll franchise, which is a franchise that I guess is not as popular in the US, but it's very popular all over the world outside of the US. And it was an interesting moment in the community where half the community was like, yeah, this is so great, I know what this is. The other half's like, what is this? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, and the half that hadn't heard of it actually kind of fell in love a little bit with it over the course of the week. It was definitely a bit of a culture shock for a lot of people because, like, it is a franchise that's never really been out in North America. But the more connected you are to, like, European people, the more likely you are to have heard of it. And it produced an interesting little game.
That's one way to put it. It's a, I mean, I guess it is a platformer. It's mostly, I want to say like nonviolent, especially at the beginning. Like it's not like you have guns or anything like that. You just kind of like jump around and try to jump on certain things and collect, what was it? It wasn't question marks. What was it that you had to collect in there?
It was like, oh, it was absolutely question mark.
It was orbs. Okay. So it was question mark orbs. And that's what got you through each level. And a lot of the stories were very disconnected. I mean, just like the show. So that kind of followed the show. But for, I think, a gamer, it's kind of weird to be playing like level 3 and it has nothing to do with level 1. There were a lot of complaints, I think, that week on Discord about, hey, this is such a great franchise, but this game is just not very good and not very fun. I got pretty far. And if... wasn't there one Discord member who got the world record on it, or at least
there was a speed runner that joined us that week.
Yeah, that was great. Shout out to them. Clen, again, shout out to him. Also tried to like learn the game for speed running to try to take the record because it wasn't particularly competitive, and it's like a fairly short game, and honestly there is some like neat bits to it. Like, there's this whole detailed ghost ship segment I don't think the guys even talked about that was actually, like, really interesting, but also just a lot of things that held it back. And so you get to listen to the episode about them complaining about the game, but also falling in love with the world at the same time. And speaking of falling in love, a game I hear Dustin is still playing to this very day... Lindley's Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup, which I've just decided to put the two names together. Dungeon Crawl for short. It's a 1997 first version, 2021 modern version, still updated classic roguelike. And I am talking like tile-based RPG, permanent death, procedurally generated dungeons, like full-on exactly that genre type of game.
We lost Dustin that week and for subsequent weeks after playing this game. I thought that we were going to lose him at Rayforce, but we lost him here.
This was definitely a really fun game. I ended up like picking it up as well, especially since I submitted the first roguelike that NGP played, NetHack. And that is an extremely difficult game. And Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup is like such a better... introduction into, like, I think it's one of the best introductions into the genre, into this like low graphics roguelike, walking around, like you said, the you know, the procedurally generated dungeons, but this one has a story, and this one has like a pretty good story to it, or at least like a good progression of like gameplay and what you're doing.
Yeah, I remember the guys being like very intimidated by NetHack, and that is the absolutely valid response to NetHack. That is a complex game. But Dungeon Crawl's simplicity makes it like really accessible. Maybe like a touch too simple sometimes for me, but also like if you think you like the idea of the genre, like you can fall in love with this one pretty easy. And well, Dustin did. Dustin presumably didn't play like the next four games. I think all of his commentary on the episodes after was a lie until status update, if you missed it, Dustin did actually beat it the other week.
Congrats to him. That's great.
I think I took note that Dustin mentioned this game in three subsequent episodes after this one because he was still playing it.
Anyway, the next game that we're covering, or they covered, is 1986's Bubble Bobble, an NES and arcade game, and then ported to like a billion other systems. It was a small, like, screen puzzle platformer type of thing where you captured enemies in bubbles and then popped them. Made distinct by the fact that it was designed for cooperative play in an era of arcades where, like, cooperative play was not heard of.
Yeah, I don't know about this game.
Yeah, this was another game that definitely, like, set the community on fire a bit.
Yeah.
Some of our community members honestly swear by this being one of the best games that's ever been made, I think. And then other ones are just like, you know, it's okay, or, like, they didn't get it at all, and they didn't like it handles weird and has like weird physics and rules to it that you have to get used to that no other game since works on. But it was definitely a fiery time in the community and on the episode. This time it was Nolan's time to get passionate about a game.
That's true. He was very excited about it. Games like this are very, overwhelming to me. They're a little intimidating to me because especially fast games that are repetitive, I just don't get hooked into it. And this was definitely one of those games where I was feeling a little like overwhelmed and just not excited.
Yeah, I think like this is one of those games where there's just enough that's different from what you expect of everything else in the genre that having something to help you learn it at first makes a big difference.
Which is why it's not New Game Plus certified.
So next up, we have Parasite Eve, a Square game that came out in 1998 for the PlayStation. It is an interesting game because Square is known for JRPGs and for fantasy and I guess at this time a little bit of what is it, diesel punk or whatever. And this is a game that was more of like a horror genre, which is not something that Square is known for. Yeah, it's mostly like it seemed like a kind of an action-y game with some role playing elements. I guess it's you got an RPG studio; they're gonna put some RPG into any genre that they make. So it was an interesting mashup, and I think this was another game that Dustin Nolan and Kenny were talking about. You know, hey, what if this was remastered and just kind of tightened up a little bit in a few places? This would be an amazing game, and it's kind of fun to stumble across these games where you're like, this is a kind of a gem. I remember seeing this in magazines when it came out, I used to subscribe to like gaming magazines and stuff. So it was interesting, but I never actually got a chance to play it. Did you all get a chance to play it, or like, what did you all think about it?
I did not play this one. And I totally missed this game when it was out, like back in the late 90s. I've heard the name. I knew it was like a game that at the time people loved, but I totally like it flew under my radar until this week. And I have to stay away from games like this because very much like Kenny, I get very like scared by these types of games. So I can't really play them because of my teeny baby hands and brain.
This was also one that was like always on the list of like, hey, these are classics I should be playing at some point, yada, yada. And I'd never really gotten around to it. And to be honest, like first off on the horror front, it's less like actually like jump scares and more just like the occasional spot of like, ooh, that's kind of gross, that type of horror instead. But also just in general, like it plays kind of Resident Evil-ish, like fixed camera angles, like running into monsters and just like fighting them on the field. But it takes out a little bit of it by turning it into like an RPG type battle system. And I have to say, like, it aged a lot better than I was expecting about PS1 games. I mentioned with like Jade Cocoon earlier, like a lot of the stop and wait type of design in RPGs of the time. And this one made a point to make sure that its action sequences were actually active and that you were engaged with them. And it actually ended up being a lot of fun, and I want to go back and finish it.
Yeah, so I definitely get scared of horror, like anything like that as well. Just like you, Shauna, I know like during that Resident Evil episode a while back, I'm going to pick this up. I started playing it and then I'm like, I can't do this. So I avoid it. But it's good to know that it's not like a jump scare.
Yeah.
And this game also had real life locations, which is not something that Square ever did, including the Chrysler building, which was, I think, in like the New Game Plus.
It was set in New York City, like real life New York City. So you go to like the Museum of Natural History and all those kind of places, Central Park, like that's where the game is set. If you didn't get enough RPGs with Parasite Eve, our next game, the SNES 1994 title Breath of Fire 2, was also a JRPG and way more traditional about it by and large. We're talking like straight up turn-based battles, like level grinding, high encounter rate. We are talking very, very classic RPG.
If I remember correctly, this game got compared to Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior, a lot just because of that repetitious grinding nature of the game. It is interesting that this is a game by Capcom, which is not known for JRPGs. And I think this was their first foray into the genre as well. And it's a, I mean, I think it's, it was a fairly just kind of standard game, right? Like nothing entirely special. It's just very, very much like what you would expect from a JRPG. It unfortunately also came out the same year as Final Fantasy VI. And so it had a lot of competition on the JRPG scene. And I think it's a lot less known as a result.
Yeah, I never had heard of this one either before we played it. And I didn't play the game along with everybody this particular week. But watching the first play, the music was really beautiful. Antonetti, I know you don't know. but trust me, the music was pretty. And the game just, to me, looked really good. And with the grinding aspect of it, for me, that would be like where I get stuck in JRPGs. Like I get stuck in the grind. So this definitely would have been a game that I probably, if I had had it, I probably would have really enjoyed it at the time. Because it looked really good and the story seemed interesting enough.
Yeah, it does evolve into like a pretty decent game in terms of like there's characters that do different stuff on the field and there's some special mechanics involving like building up your own home base and stuff that eventually emerge. But those are things that emerge very late into the game and it's hard to actually cover that when you've only got like a week to play a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of JRPGs and RPGs like in that era that came out, and I can see why it would get like overshadowed. It interestingly, it did get the new game plus status, so at least Dustin and Nolan liked it enough to give it that vote.
All right, so the next game that we played was Jet Force Gemini, and this was a very special producer episode as well with Bro Jim. So Jet Force Gemini is a 1999 third-person shooter developed and published by Rare for N64.
Yeah, this was definitely in the like same vein of Parasite Eve of like people have already always told me, hey, you should go play this one. Like it is developed by Rare. They were kind of at the height of their game right in the N64 era. Like arguably they made some of the best like platformers ever made. They also were trying to do this one, which was like, it is an interesting and experimental third-person shooter. Because you have to remember, this was N64, and like third-person shooter stuff didn't really emerge until a console generation after this. So it didn't have anything to really look at and go like, oh, this is how it's been done before, this is how we're going to do it. And it hurts the game in some ways, but in other ways it kind of like just sets it free to do whatever it wants, and it makes for an interesting experience if you can get over the controls.
Yeah, definitely the controls were a huge hurdle here. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't a fan of the N64 controller to begin with, and so and playing any kind of third-person shooter on N64 or whatever has always been a pain for me.
Yeah, and like if you're emulating it in modern day and stuff and you're using an outside joystick or like controller, your controllers don't come with six buttons like the N64 controller did. So you have to figure out like, okay, what is actually a comfortable setup here? So you have to learn it specific to your controller. There's so many hurdles that get in the way of this game and it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, I can totally see how it would be a challenge to play. I didn't play this one this week. Taking a look at the first play and stuff, it definitely looked like there was a lot going on. It almost was a little chaotic, I think, a little bit. And definitely seeing the struggle that Kenny was having with the controller. But I think that was kind of something that was common with the N64 was that, you know, locking onto targets and stuff wasn't always the easiest, especially with that joystick. I think Kenny was using an emulator or keyboard or something like that, but I just remember games in that era just weren't the easiest anyway, so that probably wasn't a mechanic that they could have fixed. I don't know if you think differently on that one, Garlel.
there was probably better ways to do it. Mostly it was the first person aiming that was a struggle to get used to. But yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of people who are big fans of this game. And you could definitely feel why. And Brojim brought a lot of that to the episode. Like, there is a lot to the game that is distinctive to the game. And I think it's still worth checking out. It's just a hard sell sort of game. And you can definitely feel that in the episode with Dustin and Nolan having never played it before. And somehow Kenny having been the one who had played it before.
The game got re-released for Xbox One, so I'm wondering what the controls are for the Xbox One in that compilation.
I think I heard it did have like reworked controls for it, so it might be better on that version. And the most recent episode the guys have covered was 1986's arcade game Rampage. One of those kind of big deal games back in the day, alongside your Pac-Man and everything. But whether it was a arcade game that has necessarily stood the test of time kind of got up for debate this week. The guys didn't exactly love it.
Yeah, I just think that quarter eaters are really hard to enjoy, I guess. I don't know. I think you have to have that nostalgia for arcades and you know, I think that there's like layers on loving games like this. And you know, the sprite work is beautiful. If you had a chance to watch the first play, you know, it's pretty. It looks like the sprites are big and chunky. It's what we like, chunky sprites. But, you know, this is just made to eat your quarters. And, you know, I would be like super frustrated playing a game like this today.
I think that atmosphere of arcade really helps. Like I'm imagining like a pizza place that has a couple, you know, a cabinet like this. You're hanging out with your friends, you're chatting, you're like, there's a game here, and it's a fun game to spend, like, you know,
$3 or $4 on. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then you move on. And I think it can't survive that transition to either being emulated today, because you can sit down and you have unlimited quarters, or you know, I don't think it's been remade, but in any way you play it, it's not the same experience. You're not sitting down with a bunch of friends and laughing at, you know, crashing down a building or something.
Yeah.
You're at home with a controller and unlimited quarters.
Right.
So not the same.
Yeah. It's had a couple sequels that have been trying to bring the same thing like forward and stuff. The main problem is just like, it's a game where it's a slow slide towards a game over with the way the health mechanics worked. Like the guys mentioned, your health literally like slowly drains just as you play.
That's sneaky.
So you're eventually, yeah, it is sneaky. It is sneezy, and I don't really enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that is like, if you're in an arcade, it's not necessarily that bad because you're just playing for a few minutes anyway. That's like largely the goal. When you get to actually just sitting down and playing it at home, it doesn't really feel like a game that's like, okay, if I do a little better, I can make it a little farther. I can outskill this game. No, it's just like, just how many times do I want to burn a continue once you take that aspect out of it? And it just doesn't survive outside of an arcade experience in a way that, like, I don't think necessarily applies to all arcade games.
Okay, so before we close out, why don't we each highlight one or two of the episodes that I think, you know, somebody who's getting into NGP, who wants to, you know, see the best content, or not see and listen to the best content, like, what do you think would be those one or two episodes from this batch? Let's start with you, Shauna.
Yeah. So I think my favorite episode that the community can go back and listen to is definitely the Rayforce episode. Just because of the banter on the episode is great. I mean, the game didn't get NGP, but it definitely shows what type of fun we have within the community. You know, it gets a little heated, which is fun. I love a good controversy. There's some good tea in there for you to listen to. So definitely check out Rayforce. And I would say, and then this is going to be my most Kenny answer, but I would say go back and listen to all of the episodes where our directors visited in the past, because that really gives you an idea of the community and who, you know, is a part of this New Game Plus thing that is growing and is really exciting to be a part of. So, you know, Anton and I know, you know, you kicked us off with your episode, Garlel. I know you were on one in the past. It wasn't in this one, but you know, we had Unbedavable, we had Wardonis and Bro Jim. So like there are lots of episodes with community members. So I'd say go back and listen to those.
Yeah, I was going to specifically call out the Final Fantasy IV Advance episode, and not just because I'm sitting here with like the guest on that episode, but just in general, like FF4 is a game with a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, not just like mechanically, but in terms of themes and stuff.
It's dark.
And I definitely appreciate like some of the digs Antonin took at like where this game doesn't necessarily like stand the test of time and execute on it the way it wants to. Like, I'm just saying I kind of agree with him on most of those points. So that's one that I suggest you go back and listen to, especially like if you're a Final Fantasy fan, but maybe even if you're not. Other than that, like the Dungeon Crawl episode itself was just really interesting, specifically because like the results were unexpected, and having the guys actually fall in love with something they hadn't previously enjoyed was just really interesting to listen to.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But see, here's the question. What is the best episode? Like, what do you quantify as the best episode today on at this time, exact time? Is it the longest episode or like the most fun? You know, how would you quantify that? I feel like we should have an episode with Kenny about the minutia of what best really means.
That would be our next Elements episode is Kenny giving
what does it mean to be best?
Right. The elements of New Game Plus.
Number one, it's this, and B.
We love you, Kenny. We swear.
Yeah, it makes the episode so much fun. I'm gonna go ahead and recommend Moomin Sail. I mean, I'm biased. I love the Moomin Trolls, but it was a really fun episode just seeing or hearing the guys like discover this franchise and talk about trash this game, but at the same time talk about the. Their, I think, quiz results, right, from the Moomin Troll website or whatever, which was just...
Oh, I remember fun. That!
Yeah. They took quizzes, and I don't remember who landed how, but I believe Kenny was Little Mai, and Little Mai is one of my favorite characters. So that would be one, and then the other Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup for sure as well. It's just like, Dustin was gushing so much over it, and it was a fantastic, fun episode.
And with that, our trip down memory lane is over, but the retro gaming doesn't have to stop there. Our three hosts will be back with you next week to play the SNES title Inspector Gadget, in case you missed that piece of news. In the meantime, if you want to join along on the ride and come hang out with the three of us and the rest of our amazing, amazing community, stop by the NGP website at ngppodcast.com. And look for join us on Discord. We're all there, like so many other of the people that you've been hearing from in the director's episodes and in the commentaries are there. And it's just a really chill and fun community, and you should come hang out with us.
And while you're on that website, why don't you go ahead and subscribe to the NGP Podcast YouTube channel, which has all the first plays and recordings of the podcast and other content. The chill music mixes. That's what's on there, which is awesome.
Definitely subscribe and listen. I listened to that playlist so many times, like too many times.
It's very high quality.
If you like what the guys have been creating for you, it might not be supporting us, but please do stop by patreon.com/NGP podcast and join the ranks of the many people who financially support the show. Including, oh boy, this is quite the list. I have no idea how Kenny does this every week.
Deep breath.
our many producers, Amarlian, Anthony, Austin, Ben, Bethany Fox, Carrie, Dan the Man, Francesca, Corey, Maxima, Nahuel, Secret Duck of Evermore, Thomas, Unbedavable, Wardonis Williams, Zion, and of course a special cheer to mine and Antonin's fellow directors, Brojim and Jordan.
Did you skip over Shauna?
Well, Shauna's
I'm
right
here.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I didn't get my name read. That's it. I'm pulling my patronage. That's it. I'm leaving.
Speaking of people that we have to name, a huge thank you to Dustin, Kenny, and Nolan for inviting all three of us on to do this. Hope you've enjoyed all collectively being at the lake, we presume, and hope we haven't screwed up this episode too much. And a big, big thanks to Tom Tate for editing and producing this episode. We're all content creators individually. It's such a relief not to have to have done this ourselves. Yeah. And I wanted to say a big thanks to the two of you for joining me on this. If you want to plug yourselves and like what you create, now is the time. The guys are not here to stop us.
This is our takeover episode.
I like that.
Yes. Anthony, why don't you start? I think you've been creating content the longest.
Not podcasts, but yeah, I've been, I have a podcast called Yet Another Final Fantasy Podcast. You can just look that up by its name or just by its shortened name, YAF Podcast, and listen to all kinds of Final Fantasy stuff content that I produce on there.
Awesome. And you can find me on YouTube under Shauna Games. I create content, mostly Sims and Animal Crossing content. And I currently have a Let's Play series starring Kenny and Nolan and Dustin, where Kenny is going from rags to wizard. And we are following him in his journey to become an all-powerful wizard in the Sims world. And I'm sure that all of our links will be down in the description below if you're watching this on our YouTube channel.
And as for me, I've got a podcast by the name of What Am I Podcasting For? And it's a show where I've been going through every Mega Man game in chronological order, whether they're really good or really, really bad. I've put myself through some hell. So please enjoy my suffering.
And then, of course, you can join the three of us in Discord. We're there every single day chatting. So join us there as well.
Yeah. And if you stop by, do let the guys know what you thought of this episode and this whole idea of having community members come on. This was a big experiment for them. And I'm sure, like, even if you want to say, hey, don't do that again, bring the main host back on. Like, I would understand.
Don't say anything bad about us.
Don't say anything bad about us. Shauna told me to say that. but yeah, do let us know what you thought and how you're feeling on it. And the future of experiments like this is up to you, the listener, to decide. Until next time, I've been not Dustin.
And I've been not Kenny.
And I've been not Nolan.
And this has been New Game Plus.